Okay, good evening. We are beginning Melachim Beis, which we mentioned last week does not really exist, but Kings 2, Chapter 2, we're speaking about Eliyahu's ascent to the heaven and the introduction to Elisha. Now, the Pasuk says, Pasuk Aleph begins, Vayihi b'ha'alos Hashem es Eliyahu bas'ara ha'shamayim. When God took Eliyahu up through a whirlwind or a storm to the heaven, and Eliyahu and Elisha were going from Gilgal. Okay? So this entire chapter, or the main episode in this chapter, is going to be about when Eliyahu goes up to Shamayim. Now, quick question. Did Eliyahu die?
I wasn't there.
I wasn't there either. But we have to study the text. You think not. So the standard approach is that Eliyahu did not die.
At least at that time.
Right? At least at that time. And maybe, remember, Hinei Anochi Sholeach Lachem Eis Eliyahu Hanavi. Right? We're waiting for Eliyahu to come to be Mevaser the Geula. Right? And whenever we have a circumcision, right? Whenever we have a bris, right? Eliyahu malach habris hinei shalach lefanecha. Eliyahu comes to every bris milah. The assumption is Eliyahu Hanavi is not dead. And the psukim over here have some indication that Eliyahu did not actually die. Okay, let's look at the psukim, and this is like a recurrent theme. Pasuk Gimel.
He was a Chabad rabbi of his generation.
I did not say that.
I didn't say it either.
I did not say that at all. But, can I tell you, my family is officially Lubavitch. We come from a Lubavitch background, what can I tell you? I wear Lubavitch tefillin, my talus is Lubavitch, whatever. I mean, my family is officially Lubavitch. My sister married David Berger's son. Now, needless to say, this was like an issue when they were going out. Now, eventually, I think David Berger Paskin that our family was really kosher, and my sister married his son. When I was going out with Rivka, so my father-in-law, who apparently has hated Lubavitch, according to David Berger, even longer than David Berger has, although I should say for the record, David Berger does not hate Lubavitch. No, David Berger is just a real believer in the traditional understanding of Ikari HaEmunah. David Berger is, because he's been studying Jewish-Christian polemics all the years, so some of the excesses in Chabad generally bother him. When when I was going out with Rivka, so my father-in-law was very worried because he heard that like my family is a little bit Lubavitch, he made some investigations, and he found out that David Berger's son married my sister, so like that was machshir. So when I got engaged at the Vart, whatever we had in Rivka's house. So David Berger, of course, comes in because he's like my parents' mechutin. And his line was, he says something to me, you know, Ezra, you know that your father-in-law has been pouring out Kesser wine for some 50 years or whatever it was. So, okay, what can we do? Now, that's a much longer conversation. That's actually one of the topics I was thinking about doing afterwards, to talk about the 13 principles of faith and maybe have that conversation in a more sustained sort of way. But let's just go on. So what are some of the indications that maybe Eliyahu did not die? So Pasuk Gimel says that the Bnei HaNevi'im who are in Beit El come to Elisha, and they say, Hayadata ki hayom Hashem lokeach es adonecha me'al roshecha. Today, God is going to take your master from your head, right? And this theme keeps on appearing. Pasuk Gimel, Pasuk Hey, Lokeach es Adonecha, right? That expression, Lokeach, to take someone away, is an expression that we have one other time in Tanakh. There's an individual called Chanoch. Vayishalei Chanoch, right? Es Elokim, ve'enenu ki lakach also Elokim. In other words, the expression of lakach might refer to someone who is taken, but taken in the sense that they don't actually die, because according to our tradition, Chanoch did not die. Right? Chanoch was taken. So there is some textual basis for the fact that Eliyahu is not going to die. There is some textual basis. to it. Now, I should point out that this question, whether Eliyahu died, is actually a question that the Trumas Hadeshin asks as a matter of halacha, which is Eliyahu Hanavi's wife allowed to remarry? Now, you never thought about that. But yeah. Like, traditionally, when there's a fellow who's like not divorcing his wife, so you tell him, sir, you got two options. Either she becomes a grusha, either you give her a get, or we kill you. And if you die, so then, we don't do this, yeah, of course. But if you're dead, saying your wife can remarry. Is Eliyahu Hanavi's wife allowed to remarry? Right, that depends on whether Eliyahu is actually dead, which is actually a machlokas on the Rishonim. A machlokas Rishonim. The Radak, if you turn to the, I don't remember. If you turn to the Radak. So the Radak basically talks about Eliyahu going up with this whirlwind to heaven. And if we'll pick up from the end of the third line, going on to the fourth line, Kain helsa oso biratzon hakeo al galgal ha'esh, visham nisrifu begadav, zulasi ha'aderet, vichola besarova atzmo, viharuach shaba el ha'alokim asher nisana. Now, basically, the Radak says that Eliyahu is taken up on some galgal ha'esh, on some wheel chariots of fire, and his clothing is burned besides his aderet, which falls down, like the belt thing fell down, which Elisha ended up taking. Bechila b'sarava atzmo, and his flesh and bones are destroyed, and his soul returns to God who took it. His soul returns to God who took it. Right? So that really sounds like that Eliyahu actually died.
Yes.
Because death means, right, that you return to God who took your soul. However, if you look at the Ralbag, right? The Ralbag is on the next page. On this pasuk, Bahalos Hashem es Eliyahu Basara Hashamayim, the Ralbag writes, E efshar sheyuvan shaleihu Hashamayim, ki lo ya'alu shom elu hagufos. Right? Bodies don't go up to heaven. Aval hakavana bo begova ha'avir. He didn't actually go up to Shamayim, but he went up to some high part in the stratosphere, not the actual Shamayim. Like the pasuk says, Arim gedolos b'tziros b'shamayim, migdav rosho b'shamayim. In other words, the Rabbag is for saying that it's impossible for a human to be in the Shamayim. V'hine, nisa'ohu ruach Hashem, b'mlechas Hashem, el makom lo noda, adayin. God took him to a place where we don't know. V'hu chai shum kemoshe be'arnu. And Eliyahu is living over there. Right? In other words, Eliyahu Hanavi seems, according to the Ralbag, to remain alive, and according to the Radak, Eliyahu Hanavi has actually died. And of course, this is relevant for whether his wife can remarry. There's a suffix we mentioned in the Trumas Hadesh, and Rabbi Chanan Wasserman has a small essay about this in the second volume of the Kovetz Shiurim as to whether Eishes Eliyahu is permitted to get remarried. The Gemara has to derive from Psukim that a woman is permitted b'misas habal, right? The fact that a woman is allowed to remarry after her husband died, the Gemara derives from Sukkim. Now, that would seem to indicate that short of Misa, maybe there is no permission granted, and therefore, Rav Ochanan questions the statement of the Trumas Hadeshin. Trumas Hadeshin says that the Torah speaks about Eishes Re'ehu, but the wife of Eliyahu is an Eishes Malach. That the prohibition of marrying when you're married is if you are the wife of your friend, the wife of somebody, but not the wife of an angel, and Eliyahu became an angel. Again, this is one of those topics which is interesting. There's a discussion in the Tshuva Nachsam Sofer about when Eliyahu comes back, is he obligated in mitzvos? No. The Gemara in Ksuba speaks about how Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, after he died, would return to make kiddush for his family every Friday night. No? But he's dead! And dead people can't do mitzvahs. Like, what's going on? So there's a whole literature about this. It's more of like one of these humorous types of like Lake Shavuos night literature. It's to keep you awake. But, okay, the literature exists. So let's go on. Right? Let's resume the Pesukim. So Eliyahu is going up. Oh, you had a comment. I'm sorry.
If you look at what you said about the Radak.
The Radak says that he died.
How do you reconcile that with the Pesukim?
I mean, the Pesukim don't say explicitly that he didn't die. The Pesukim said that God takes him away. And usually when God takes someone away, the person dies.
You said
Lakach also means death, right?
You said, it sounds like from the Pesukim that he did.
I mean, I think there's it's like a tenth of a diuk. The fact that it says Lokeach es Adonecha sounds a little bit like that pasuk by Chanoch. It's not compelling. It's indicative. It's not compelling. Yeah, Frida?
In common usage, we say God took him.
Right.
I went to the hospital and God did it and I did it.
So we speak, right.
God had already taken.
Correct. However, in biblical usage, we have terms for death, Vayigva Vayomos. Right? That's death. You don't see the word Vayomos. Chazal have a few people who didn't die. Right, Yaakov Avinu lo meis. The Gemara in Tainus on Daf Hey says that Yaakov Avinu didn't die. Now, what exactly this means? The Gemara asks, "What do you mean?" But they put him in a coffin in Egypt. Right? It says, "Oh, it appeared like he was there. He's not really dead." Again, there is a lot of literature about this. Some of the literature can be found in Chabad sources. Also, not going there. Let's go on. Now, so when Eliyahu is going up. Basa Ara HaShamayim is going up in the whirlwind. So Eliyahu and Elisha are walking from Gilgal. Now, Eliyahu tells Elisha, Shev na po, that's Pasuk Beis. Why don't you wait here? Because God sent me to go to Beit El. And Elisha says, I'm not leaving, you only go to Beit El. So what we see over here is interesting. Eliyahu is trying to dissuade Elisha from coming on this journey. He says, Elijah, why don't you stay? Elisha, why don't you stay? And Elisha says, no, I want to come with you. Right? So they go from Gilgal to Beit El. When they get to Beit El, so a group of B'nai Hanavi'im who are in Beit El, they come and they speak to Elisha. And they say, hey, Elisha, do you know that God is taking your master today? And Elisha says, yeah, I know. Be quiet. Like, fine. So then they leave Beit El, and Eliyahu says, you stay in Beit El, I'm going to Yericho. And Elisha again says, I'm not going to leave you. The same thing happens in Yericho. The B'nai HaNavim come out. They say, you know, God is going to take Eliyahu away. And Elisha says, I know, be quiet. Again, Eliyahu says, you stay here, right? The same exact thing. And then Eliyahu goes to Yarden. So we have three places that we're going to. There's Beit El. He's leaving Gilgal. He's going to Beit El, to Yericho, and then to the Yarden. In all of these places, effectively, Eliyahu tells Elisha, you stay here. So what is going on? Why is Eliyahu trying to dissuade Elisha from coming? And we also have to figure out, what is this episode of the B'nai HaNavi'im? We have these young prophets, student prophets, no? Apparently you can go to school to be a student prophet. Maybe this is something that would earn Yeshiva University some money, that we should open a school of prophecy, because my understanding is that there's not a single college in the United States that currently has one, and we would corner the market, right? And you can, now, by the way, Chazal learned the fact that they're called B'nai HaNavi'im, when it really means student prophet, means Bonim and Talmidim are equivalent. Right? And we also see this idea later on in the Perek, when Eliyahu goes up to the Shamayim, Elisha calls out, Avi, Avi, right? Daddy. Right? In other words, the assumption of a teacher being a father-type figure, actually, right, Chazal play on this a lot, Bonim Elo HaTalmidim, and it emerges from these psukim, at least in the context of the Vim. So now, what is going on over here? What's this B'nai HaNavi'im and the whole thing? So apparently, we see a few things. First of all, there's a similar episode in the book of Rus, no?
Absolutely.
Right? That Naomi says, you go, and Rus says, no, I'm coming with you. Go, I'm coming, right? the same type of idea. Apparently, there is a certain tension, I would say, between Eliyahu and Elisha. Eliyahu is known for being an isolate.
Yeah.
He likes being on his own. Elisha is very much different than Eliyahu. Elisha is a prophet who, when Eliyahu comes and notices Elisha ben Shaphat, so he says, oh, I'm going to follow you, but first let me go and kiss mom and dad, and let me bring a carbon, let me have like a social get-together. Elisha is involved with people. Eliyahu is like this fiery person who people are scared of. Eliyahu imagines, he knows he's dying. Everybody knows, or he knows he is passing on to the next beyond, right? He knows that he's leaving. Everyone knows he's leaving. The B'nai HaNevi'im say it. Elisha says, I know. But they have a different vision of what it means. Eliyahu imagines that this is going to be like my the highest spiritual experience ever. And for me, the highest spiritual experience is on my own. Because as an isolate, Eliyahu HaNavi doesn't want anyone with him. So he says, Elisha, stay. Elisha, stay. But Elisha doesn't want to. Elisha has this connection to his Rebbe. He wants to go along. He says, I'm not. Now, the fact that Eliyahu is connected to the people and Elisha isn't, I think also... Okay. Huh? I'm tired. Right? The fact that Elisha is connected to people and Eliyahu isn't, thank you, that also shows how the B'nai HaNevi'im, these young student prophets... Now, if I'm a student prophet, presumably my teacher is the greatest prophet. Right? The Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas HaNevi'im is probably Eliyahu, not Elisha. But yet, these B'nai HaNevi'im, they approach Elisha. Why? Because the Rebbe is too scary! Because Eliyahu is this fire and brimstone guy. They're scared of approaching him, so they go over to Elisha. Now, I forgot the name of the sefer where I saw this today, but there are three places that are mentioned. No, they go to Beit El, then they go to Yericho, and then they go to Yarden. These places are all similar in the sense that they are transitional places. Beit El is known in Chumash that Yaakov Avinu sleeps, right? And right, he says, "Ein zaki im Beit Elokim v'zeh shar hashamayim." In other words, Beit El is this place where there is a link between heaven and earth. And Eliyahu knows that he's passing on, and they're going to places where there's going to be some link, but each place they go to, oh, that's not the link we want, let's move on to the next. So first it's Beit El, that's a place of a link between heaven and earth. Then they go to Yericho. Yericho is the first place where the Jewish people went when they entered the land of Israel, right? The walls of Jericho, they come tumbling down, right? It's a place of revealed miracles, but it's basically the last fully revealed miracle after they enter the land of Israel. Yericho is known as being like the lock for the country. It's a place that merges, right, life in Israel with life outside of Israel. And the Yarden is certainly that. The Yarden is the river that's the merge. So they go to all these three places, and the idea of going to these three places is that they're going to create this merge. They're going to create this merge between heaven and earth. And again, Eliyahu says, I don't want you, and Elisha keeps on saying, I want to come. Lev, you got a comment? Okay.
I heard someplace that in Tarshu that you're not allowed to go to Yericho.
You're not allowed to rebuild Yericho. You're not allowed to rebuild Yericho. Yeah. Right. Now. So pasuk ches. Let's continue pasuk ches, verse 8. Vayikach Eliyos adarto vayiglom. Eliyahu takes his aderet, his mantle, and he wraps it up. It happens that vayiglom is a hapax legomenon, for those of you who are keeping score. It's one of these words that only appears once in a book of literature. He takes his mantle, he wraps it up, he hits the water splits, and they both go becharava. So they cross over in dry land to the other side of the Yarden. Right? The other side of the Yarden, which is what we call Jordan. When they're passing over, now is the first time Eliyahu and Elisha have a conversation. They've been traveling from city to city. They ain't saying nothing. No? Because Eliyahu probably wants this to be his own moment. He's not interested in little student guy hanging out with him. Like, you stay here. They're not talking. Finally, they're going through the river. So Eliyahu speaks to Elisha. He says, Sha'ama a'esalach. Ask what I should give you. B'term alakach mimah, before I'm taken away. Vayomer Elisha, v'hina pi shnayim b'ruchacha elai. Let me have a double portion of your spirit. Now, Vayomer Eliyahu says, Hikshisa l'sho, you're asking for a difficult thing. If you see me taken away from you, you'll have it. If not, you won't have it. And as they continue to walk and talk, so then the chariots of fire, the horses of fire come down, they separate them, and Eliyahu goes up in the whirlwind to heaven. In other words, the conversation is cut short. They have a conversation. What do you want? Elisha says, I want to be double you. Eliyahu says, that's hard. Right? Suddenly, boom, chow! Right? And he's up there to the heavens. End of Eliyahu.
Is it double you or double from the brain of Eliyahu?
So what does double mean? Yes. So there are two ways of understanding it. Rashi takes the approach that Elisha is asking for double of what Eliyahu had. And therefore Rashi says, you can see the Rashi on Pasuk Yud, Hikshisa Lish'ol, Rashi says, I can't give you more than what I have. Right? You're asking for double of what I have, but I can only give you what I have. I can't possibly give you more than what I have. That's the way Rashi takes it. However, the other Mefarshim, here, the Radak, and more explicitly in the Ralbag, actually, they say that Pishnayim is the same as a Bechor gets a double portion. If a person, for argument's sake, has two sons, one is a Bechor, the other isn't. So how many portions is the estate divided into?
Three.
And the Bechor gets two of the three. Right? If you have six sons, so the Bechor, it's divided up into seven portions, n plus one, and you get, right, two of those portions. That's a Bechor. So according to the Ralbag and the Radak, right, the Radak quotes this from his father, the Ralbag just says this on his own, that he's asking for Pishnayim in the sense like a Bechor gets double. Meaning, this is something that Eliyahu could give. So why is Eliyahu saying, I can't give it to you? Eliyahu says, it's hard for me to give. What's he asking? What's going on? So it might be as follows. Part of the tension over here might be that Eliyahu is the great Rebbe of all the prophets. We have these B'nai HaNaviim floating around, these little student prophets. Elisha is asking for something very special. He's asking for a double portion of prophecy, meaning that I should be greater than all of them. I should be more of a prophet than all the B'nai HaNaviim. Now, if that's the case, Eliyahu is saying, you know what, I don't know exactly. My job as a teacher, sometimes it's very hard as a teacher to assess who's the student who's a 99 student, who's the 98 student. Who's great? Eliyahu says, I don't know. She's so show, you're asking for a hard thing. I don't know if you are really greater than all of these. Remember, there are B'nai HaNaviim in all of these cities, and Beit El and Yericho, etc. I don't know if you, Elisha, are greater, but Elisha, if you see me go up, that's going to mean that you're greater. Because by seeing me go up to the heaven, that indicates that you got a vision that the others didn't get. And that means that you're greater. So Hikshisa L'sho is not like the way Rashi takes it. I can't give you more than I have, but rather I don't know. Right? In other words, and now we can understand why Eliyahu is trying to push Elisha away at the beginning of the parak. He says, Elisha, why are you coming with me? We have all of these B'nai HaNeviim, right? Who says you deserve more than anyone else? You're not greater than the others, Elisha. Right? That's really the back and forth here in this chapter. Now, if we take this approach just a step further, again, I'm embellishing a little bit on the way Alex Israel takes it. So after Eliyahu goes up to the heaven, so of course Elisha sees, that's Pasuk Yud Beis, right? And Elisha then picks up the Deret Eliyahu, picks up the mantle of Eliyahu, which shows Elisha is taking over Eliyahu's role, right? And Elisha stays by the Yarden, right? And then Elisha hits the Yarden and he goes back. Now, basically, what we are doing is we are replaying the scenes in reverse. Okay? First they go from Gilgal to Beit El, to Yericho, to Yarden, then they cross the Yarden. What Elisha does the first thing is he crosses the Yarden back. He also splits the water, Pasuk Yudalad, the same miracle that Eliyahu did, Elisha did. Now, according to the version that Elisha has doubled the power that Eliyahu had, so the miracle of Elisha splitting the Yarden has to be greater than the miracle of Eliyahu splitting the Yarden. Because he's, right? So to explain that, you have to say, well, when Eliyahu split the Yarden, he's splitting it for two people to go through, for two tzaddikim. Elisha's splitting it only for one tzaddik, so it's greater. That's one approach. Okay. The other approach is, not that Elisha's a greater miracle doer than Eliyahu was, but that Elisha's just greater than the other prophets. That's the other version that we could mention. So, as they come back, Pasuk Tesvav, the B'nai HaNeviim who are in Yericho, right? So now we're retracing our steps. The B'nai HaNeviim in Yericho, they say, oh, the spirit of Eliyahu is on Elisha, and they go to greet Elisha, and they bow down to him, to a certain extent to accept Elisha's sovereignty, that he's now recognized as the leader. And they say, right, there are 50 of us, let's go and look for Eliyahu, maybe he just went flying away, and maybe we could find him on a mountain or something like that. In other words, they recognize that Elisha is a leader, but they didn't yet recognize that Elisha is a greater prophet than they are. Right? So this story will prove that Elisha is a greater prophet. Why? Let me explain. Because they don't realize that Eliyahu has gone up and coming back. So they say, let's look for Eliyahu. Maybe he's on one of the mountains, etc. So Elisha says, don't look. Right? The end of Pasuk Tezayin, right, he says, ye shall not send. Don't look. Right? It's not worth it. You're not going to find him. But they badger him. Right, Pasuk Yud Zayin. So he says, okay, go look for Eliyahu if you want. So they go out, they look for Eliyahu for 3 days, they don't find him. They come back, Elisha is still in Yericho, and they say, and he says, oh, didn't I tell you don't look for him? This episode shows us that Elisha is a greater prophet. He knew more than they did. Because they think they could find Eliyahu, and he's proving to them, no, you can't. You can't find Eliyahu, because right, it's not worth looking for him.
Couldn't we say that Elisha had more information?
He had more information because he's a greater Navi. That's what it means.
No. He had more information because he knew that he was taken up to Shemayim and the other prophets didn't.
Maybe. Again, once we're in the realm of Nevuah, I'd rather say it this way. Let's just go on. So they're in Yericho, and the people in Yericho say, you know what, Yericho's a great city, but there's bad water, and the people miscarry. Now, this sounds like the worst type of real estate agent ever. Oh, what a wonderful home, but you should know there are lots of vermin, and the pipes leak, and, right, what's good, right? Look at Pasuk Yud Ches, Yud Tes, whatever it is. Right? Moshav HaIr Tov, it's a beautiful city, But the water is bad and the land miscarries. It doesn't produce anything. That doesn't sound like it's such a good city. So Chazal learned from here, by the way, that there's Chein Hamakom Al Yoshvav. That if you live in an area, you think it's nice, no matter how ugly it looks. I probably shouldn't say this on tape, but a few years ago we had a Purim digital short called Washington Heights Luxury Community. Remember this one? There are pictures of all of, there are certain parts of Washington Heights which are not as nice, should we say. They had all those pictures, like, oh, Washington Heights Luxury Community. But that's exactly correct! Because Chein HaMakom Al Yoshvav, wherever you live, you think is beautiful, no? Right, the Gemara says, Chein Isha Al Bayiwa, right? Etc. People always think that their spouse is attractive. Now, they say to Elisha, the water is bad, and the land is miscarrying. So Elisha says, bring me a new pitcher, and put some salt in, and they take it to him, and then they go to where the water comes, and Elisha says, God said, I healed the water, and there will be no more death, and the water is healed, and it's all good. What Elisha's doing is something very similar to the episode in the Torah of Mara. They come to Mara, and they throw a stick into the water, and by yimtiku hamayim, the water becomes sweetened. They threw a bitter stick in, it made it sweet also, for a nes betoch nes. The same idea, what Elisha is doing, is Elisha is bringing the water back. Now, there's a certain symbolism over here, reflecting the difference between who Eliyahu was and who Elisha was. What was the first miracle that Eliyahu did?
No rain.
No water!
Yes.
The first miracle Elisha does, it, again, the first unique miracle, because just making the sea split the same as Eliyahu did, is that there is water. And this also shows that unlike Eliyahu, who's a prophet who is distant, austere, separated, Elisha is a man of the people. So his first miracle is to sweeten the water, right? And because, according to one opinion in Chazal, it's supposed to be a double miracle, so he sweetens the water with salt.
Doesn't the following story contradict this?
That what?
With the bears.
We'll talk about that in a second. Right? Yeah. The story with the bears seems to be a question in this entire approach that we'll talk about in 2 minutes. Let's go on. So after Yericho, again, backtracking, they go to Beit El, right? Again, they're going back to the same communities. And there are these young boys who leave the city, and they are telling him, Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach, hey, Baldy. So basically, they're taunting Elisha. By the way, Eliyahu, the one thing we know about him is he had lots of hair. Right? He's a hairy individual. And Elisha is bald. What that means, again, there's a contrast that we're drawing. Now they're taunting Elisha. Okay, it's mean. Elisha never had Muhammad Ali to teach him how to fight or something to get back at these kids. Whatever it is, but Alei Kereach, they're making fun of him. Vayifen achara vayir aim. He turns around, he sees them, and he curses them. And two bears come out from the forest, and they split them open, and 42 kids die. And then they go to Carmel and then to Shomron. Now, what the heck? Okay, so you're taunted. So Elisha doesn't like this. So now suddenly he kills them. And Chazal say, by the way, there's a double miracle, because lo dubim v'lo yar, that's the expression, that there was no forest beforehand, there were no bears beforehand. Chick, chack, boom, a great miracle. Forest is created, bears are created, and everything. Now,
Is this supposed to
show the greatness of Elisha? And we just tried to explain that Elisha is a man of the people. So perhaps the explanation is like this. And again, this is conjecture, but this is what Alex Israel suggests. If you read Pasuk Chaf Daled, Elisha turned back and he sees them. He turns around. In other words, these people who are taunting Elisha are coming from the city of Yericho, the city where Elisha had just healed the water. Right? That maybe is what's meant by Vayifen Acharov. If that's the case, so what Elisha's really doing is Elisha These people, by the way, Rashi comments, the reason why they're so upset is because their job here, let's look at the Rashi somewhere. Oh, here. The Rashi, Pasuk Chof Gimel. Right, Alei Kereach. Rashi writes, Alei Mikan Shekrachta Alenus HaMakom. Get up from here. You made the place boil. Sha'ad Akshav Hayim Mistakim Lohabi Mayim Matukim Mirachok. Umisparnasim Bekach. We had a job. We were water carriers. And now because of you, we lost our job. Because you sweetened the water in Yericho. So therefore, right, they're taunting Elisha. Now, effectively, what's going on is they are challenging Elisha's role as the new prophet. They're saying, Elisha, you are viewing yourself as someone who is the person who helps people, but really, you hurt us. You took away our parnasa. Right? That's their argument against Elisha. Right? You're championing yourself as the man of the people, unlike Eliyahu, but maybe the Eliyahu approach is better because we suffered because of you, Elisha. Now, Elisha's response is, you know what, sometimes people who don't see the bigger picture, we have to deal harshly with them. And they have to be killed because you're not allowing me to assert myself as the new prophet, the new ruler, etc., who's there to help everyone in general. And you guys, because of your own personal negios, right, what you have, that the couple of dollars that you want to turn, that's what you're upset about, oh, that's not going to go. Right? So perhaps that, again, this is the way Alex Israel says it, again, embellished by me, but I think that there might be some truth. So what we basically learned tonight is how Eliyahu and Elisha have opposite type of personalities in the prophetic realm, two different things, two different people, and Elisha now is the man on the scenes, and I guess we'll have to continue from here whenever. Okay, Chevra, thank you very much for listening. Have a good night and enjoy your summer.